Morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. Normally, I would have this beautiful moment where I'd set up silence, and then I had this whole thing on the screen that I was going to do for you guys, but we're going to do a little differently today. So just, how about this? If you want to, close your eyes. Kind of just settles it down and gets you out of... I'm just going to read to you a poem from the book that we're using for this process. It says, you have stood at this junction before, and you'll stand at this junction again. If you pause, you can ask yourself which way to turn. You can turn away from your sadness and run the race named revenge. You've run that tired track before, haven't you? Again and again. Or you could admit your own pain and walk the path that ends. In this direction lies freedom, my friend. I can show you where hope and wholeness make their home. But you can't push past your anguish on your way there. To find the path to peace, you'll have to meet your pain and speak its name. It's about 4 years ago, I got the call. I was actually walking to my doctor's appointment for some random checkup. I got a call from my dad. It said, your mom died. And it wasn't a shock. She'd been dying for about 4.5 years. We were just waiting for the call. But it never feels good. So I called work and said, I'm not coming in today. I called WestJet, booked a flight. I was down there within a couple hours. I wanted to be there for my family. My dad was alone now. And it was hard, and we did okay. The first week of loss, there's so much going on, you know, funeral arrangements, who's moving what to where, how do I get this to that? You kind of get lost in the details. And I remember the day the funeral came up, and me and my brother did the eulogy, and we celebrated our mom's well, sorry. I didn't think I'd get emotional on this one. And then we put her in the ground. And that phase was done. And we started grieving. Because the 4.5 years of grieving we'd done from the diagnosis to you're dying to she's dying, we call that pre-grieving. It doesn't count. Just as an FYI, folks, if you ever pre-grieve, it doesn't count, because when it happens, you start grieving again, and that's the real stuff. And not only are you grieving the loss of your mom and all that means, there's a lot of stress and pain that goes through people in these moments. And as a family, you're trying to come together to create a funeral that honors someone's life, and it doesn't always go that smooth. Things are said out of pain and sadness, and so we're grieving some of that. And I remember 2 days after, I was with someone I love. And they said something to me that in the moment I was okay, I kind of kept it in my head and I was okay. But it just started to eat down. It was like acid that started in my head and just kind of started eating down into my guts. And I just felt like something had been torn out of me. For days, that's all I could think about. It's like my brain was 90% that, and there was 10% trying to run my life the way I needed it to run, and it wasn't going that well. It was a strange time for me because I'm really good at hiding from things in my head. And this one I couldn't shake. And as the days went, it just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I know part of you is thinking, well, what was said? And I just want to say, I don't want to tell any more of the story, if that's okay. Because I don't want to cause any more hurt. That's not what I'm here to do today. But you've all been in those moments, right? Something has been said to you, not said to you. Someone did something, didn't do something. You were gossiped about, felt abandoned, neglected. And sometimes that wound hits right away, and sometimes it takes a while, but you can just feel it in your guts. I loved Jeff's metaphor last week. It's like all these wounds, and you stuff them in a suitcase, and then you spend your life carrying this around after you, right? It's not even so much that the wound hurts, although the wound does hurt. It's that you carry it around with you wherever you go. You can't be free of it. It's brutal. Now, Jeff talked last week a bit about the whole beginning of this series, where we got the series from the book we're studying. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to that message, I highly recommend go back, check out the podcast. Because he told a powerful story. But he said the first step to moving on, to finding freedom from that baggage that we're carrying, is to tell your story. Just tell it to anyone. Get it coming out of you, so it's not stuck there anymore. Now, if I was a complete jerk, I'd ask you to raise your hand if you told your story this week, but I will not ask you that. But I hope some of you did. I know some of you did, because you reached out to us and said, hey, can I just have some time? I just want to just tell you my story. And that's the first part of this process, right? The whole point of this is to move on from those hurts, to find freedom from them. And Desmond Tutu, in studying everything he did through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to help heal apartheid in South Africa, said the first step that he saw time and time and time again is the willingness to tell your story, the openness to tell your story. But then it moves on. Because after that person said that thing to me that just gutted me, I had told the story. I told the story a lot. To people who could keep a confidence, of course. And it was almost like it was getting worse. That wound was digging deeper inside of me. It was running more of my life. And let me just tell you something. When your wound runs your life, it doesn't run it well, does it? Mine was not doing a good job of my life. The number of times I would type up emails, I'll never talk to you again. Luckily, I didn't send them. But I'm embarrassed the number of times I wrote that down over and over again, just going, I'm done with you. I'm done. Anything they said to me triggered me. They could say, hi, Vince, how are you doing? And I'd be freaking out. Our wounds don't run our lives well, do they? And mine was getting worse. Finally, I called my counselor. Said, I need some help. I'm losing it here. And I still remember, because I couldn't go see her. She's in Lethbridge. I couldn't go see her, so we Skyped. Me sitting on my couch with my phone, her outside of her barn with her phone. And she said, tell me the story, Vince. And so I told her the story. She asked some details, but not much. And then she said, what did it mean to you? It's like, what do you mean, what does it mean to me? Then I started telling the story again, right? Because that's what we do. She said, Vince, what do you feel? I was like, that's easy. I'm angry. I'm always angry. All my emotions come through anger, right? So why I have so much road rage? I could be sad and I'd be angry at the person driving in front of me. But she's a really good counselor. She's really good. Well, I think a beginner counselor could probably figure this one out, but she said, okay, what's underneath that? And she just, I just remember her digging and digging. And I just, you know, I'm like a boxer. I'm bobbing and weaving, trying frantically to get away from her. And she's just like, no, she got me in the corner like, Vince, what do you feel? And I still remember the moment. I was like, I feel so betrayed that that person that I love so much would say that to me 2 days after we put my mom in the ground. From anyone else, I could have taken it. I could just brush it off. But from them. And as you can tell, it started to move in me. That thing that was stuck in my guts for so long started to shift. And I just cried. Just give me a second. You see, there's something powerful that we know about humanity. Desmond Tutu spoke of it. Psychologists have studied it. And that's to name your feelings. When I said I felt betrayed, because the person I love so much said that to me. That was what I was feeling. Daniel Siegel, a famous neurobiologist, says this: you have to name it to tame it. It being your emotions. And I know it sounds trite and easy. It's not at all. Any of you who've got this thing stuck inside of you, you know this is not easy. But let me explain to you how this works. Have you ever sat in a restaurant and looked at something and had two thoughts at the same time? Sometimes I get this with salad. I look at a salad and I think, oh, I should eat that. And then the other part of my brain is looking at that burger over there with fries, with extra cheese and some bacon. It's like, oh, I want to eat that. At the same time, I'm thinking, I want to eat this salad, and I don't want to eat this salad, right? I want to eat this burger, but I'm going to Hawaii in 2 weeks, and I do not want to look like I just ate that burger. This isn't actually just like a funny thing of how we work. There's actually, let's use this as a metaphor, there's a way of looking at this, that we have at least two brains. There's a study that says we have many more, but let's just start with two. To simplify it, one brain is your logical brain. It's the brain that uses words. It's the brain I'm using right now. It's how you guys translate words. It's a very structured brain. It's very orderly. If I switch my tenses, you guys will go, wait a second, that didn't work. There's another brain inside of you. That's your emotion brain. Gross simplification, but just bear with me. This brain not only feels things, it actually stores the feelings of moments. So you have two brains inside of you. One brain is saying, I was betrayed. And the next brain is saying, oh, but they didn't mean it. You didn't hear that right. You're just being sensitive. Come on, just shake it off already. And what do you think this brain over here does when that brain tells it to shut up? It turns the volume up. Oh yeah? I feel betrayed! Right now you're like, no. You're not feeling that at all. And you have this fight in your brain, which literally is your emotion side of your brain and the logic side of your brain fighting each other. They call it disintegration. And here's the thing we've learned. Unless you reconcile those two, unless they become friends, unless you integrate yourself, this thing doesn't seem to shift inside of you. I have a good friend who spent most of their life basically putting a wall right here between their two brains and ignoring that one completely. They'd had some really hard things happen in their childhood. And so they lived like this. La, 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 la. Well, this brain staged a revolt. It turned it to 12. Oh, you're not going to listen? Well, I'm going to shut down the system. Took them out at the knees. Nervous breakdown, non-functional, panic attacks, anxiety. That's your brain going, no, 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 you will listen to me. I don't care what you say. You will listen to me. I was talking with another friend just on the way back. This guy has got nothing but relationship drama. He looks for it, I swear. Well, he admits it. He looks for it. And he's been hung up on this girl for months now. They've already broken up. She's moved on. He's still, you know, pining for, I don't even know what he's doing. Shows up to an ice climb. Her car's there. Relational discord and sharp pointy picks, probably not the greatest option, right? He didn't even go in. He was just like, and we're not going there. But as he went, he drove away. The person he was driving with said, oh, you know what? And he started telling stories about his ex-girlfriend. Not mean stories. Just things that they'd wrestled with them. All the things he had been feeling for months. You know what he was saying the whole time? Oh, it's probably my fault that she was like that. I probably did something. It's me. When he finally said, wait a second, no. She screwed up too. Have you ever done the hard work of just sitting with your emotions? Bring to mind a wound that was done to you and just sit with it for a minute. Just be mindful of what your brain's trying to do. Is it trying to like explain it away or Vince, no, 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 I don't need to deal with this. No, no, it's okay. Or can you just sit in it and feel the depth of that emotion? You know, I was having a drink with Rod. You guys know Rod, the violin player, tall guy? And he says the weirdest thing to me. He says, I love reading the Psalms. So don't know, Psalms is a book in the Bible. It's all like this weird poetry stuff. As you can tell, I don't love it. And he's like, I read it every year. And I'm like, really? Like, why? But you know what? About 2 minutes later, all of a sudden something hit. Because I was thinking about this message. And he says, I love reading the Psalms. And let me just share with you a psalm. You know what? We're not going to share with you the psalm because that would have been on the screen for me to read. Let me just remember a psalm and see if I can share with you guys. The psalm starts off like this. It says, okay, God, we used to be good. And now, just for those of you who don't, this doesn't fit for you, God for them is anything that happens that's good. So don't necessarily think old man in the sky, don't think theism. It's when things are good, God is. When things are bad, God hates us. That's how they thought. And so they're writing in this culture and they say, things were good, but now basically you've left us to our own devices. Everyone's making fun of us. You know, like kids are kicking sand in our eyes over recess. The language is beautiful because it's poetry. It says, you've wounded us so deeply. At one point he says, we're laying here in the dirt and our enemies have their boots on our neck and you do nothing. When you're wounded, what's the first two steps to find freedom? First, you tell the story. And second, you name the emotion. What emotion are they feeling? They feel abandoned, don't they? We are all alone, and you are nowhere. I wonder if the Psalms were kept around for so long because they name our journeys. So take a minute. Bring up a wound that comes to mind. Bring up something you can't move on from. It's just, it's stuck there. It's like mine where it's just, it's eating you up. And just sit with it for a bit. Maybe take a deep breath. Can you name the emotion? Not anger like I always do. Go deeper than that. Is it shame, rejection, disappointment, betrayal? The last piece I want to say on this, if you find that you can't name the wound, it might be because you're sitting in that emotion side and it's running the show. And you can feel that the emotions just keep flipping around and moving, and you can't even name the wound because it's just to another wound. You feel anxiety, panic, all this stuff. That's this part of your brain. It actually needs the structure of your logical brain to help it find itself, to find a container for itself, so that you can move on. So just take a minute. I'm going to get her to play a little bit of music for me. And just sit with that wound. Try and find one and see if you can name the emotion. You'll know the emotion is the right emotion when you feel the depth of it. You might feel tears come up. You might feel something shift. I don't know what will happen for you. So just take a minute. Okay, can we shift a little bit? Take another deep breath if you wouldn't mind. We're just going to put that aside for just a second. First step to finding freedom, tell your story. Second step, name the emotion, the true, deep, core emotion. The third step is the one that always makes me squirm. I was going to put it up on the screen so you could see it for a second before I talked about it, but it's granting forgiveness. Can you feel something come up as soon as I say forgiveness? It's like, ugh, what is that even? Ugh. Asked a bunch of people this last couple of weeks, what does forgiveness mean? They're like, I don't know, but I don't like it. So I thought I'd do this. I just want to start with telling you what forgiveness is not. Now, I did take a look at the Bible. We are a church, after all, and we do like the Bible. There's a lot of wisdom there. I spent some time looking at the Bible and looked up forgiveness, but here's the problem. The forgiveness we're talking about isn't the forgiveness they seem to be talking about. Forgiveness in the Bible is forgiving a debt. So you owe me $5. I'm like, I'll forgive the debt. You don't owe me $5 anymore. That's what they're getting at. That's not the work we're doing here, is it? So it doesn't feel quite right. But here's what, in all the work that Desmond Tutu did, in all the stories he heard, in all the cases, and they heard thousands, and the most gruesome ones ever, he said, your third step is granting forgiveness. But let me tell you what forgiveness is not. First, the Christian tradition does not demand forgiveness. It doesn't. Not saying you can't forgive somebody, but it doesn't demand that you forgive. It's interesting, isn't it? Number two, forgiveness is not weakness. This isn't that, you know, turn your back to the person, let them beat you up kind of forgiveness where it's, you know, I don't have any strength here. I'm supposed to just play the passive party. I just have to take whatever they give me. That's not the forgiveness we're talking about here today. Forgiveness is incredibly powerful. The heroes in our society are the people who forgive. Forgiveness is not for the person we're forgiving. That's not what forgiveness means. Forgiveness is something we do for ourselves when we choose to. We do it to find freedom. And we do it to find peace. And if you don't want those things, don't forgive. But if you're sick of hauling that stupid suitcase around, if you're sick of that thing running your life at the worst times, maybe it's time to look at this. Forgiveness is not a subversion of justice. Let me say that one again. Forgiveness is not a subversion of justice. Again, I had this quote on the screen. Let me see if I can remember it. He says something along the lines of, forgiveness is never, ever forgetting. Forgiveness is fierce remembering. Of being willing to tell the story and name the hurts. That's where forgiveness comes from. It does not come from a sort of amnesia that said that hurt never happened or some denial of the hurt. No, it comes from remembering. So if you're thinking, sitting here going, but Vince, I can't forgive because I can't forget. Great. Our goal isn't to forget. Our goal is to move on from it. Forgiving is not easy. There's a reason why we don't do it, because it's hard. It's really hard. How long does it take to you forgive? Sometimes it happens in a moment. Sometimes it happens in a lifetime. He tells a story of a woman who was in prison with the same four women or five women in her cell. So there's six of them all together. Every morning she got up and she said in the mirror, I forgive them. About 5 years in, one of her cellmates one day said, oh, hey, you finally believed what you said. Took her 5 years to get there. Sometimes it's a moment. Are there some people beyond forgiving? In our tradition, and Desmond Tutu's in our tradition, says we're all made in the image of God, and in some sense there's a core element. For some people it's way deep down there of humanity that says we can still forgive them. No matter if everything they built on top of that was horrific. And finally, must we always forgive? No, we don't. So why forgive? So what is forgiveness? I've read this story before, but I want to read it to you guys again because this one just hits me hard. It's a story from his book. It starts like this. For the first 11 years of my life, all I remember is fear. Not like a fear of falling and getting hurt or even the fear you feel when you know you're in trouble for something. It was life or death fear. Sheer terror every moment. I feared for my life and for the lives of my brothers and sisters and for the life of my mother. My father was the angriest, most violent human I have ever known. He didn't simply hit me, he beat me. He humiliated me. He tortured me. And he did the same to my seven siblings, locking one brother in the car for days as punishment. I remember this one time my little brother was only about 4 or 5. He was playing with his blocks. My father picked him up by the hair, by his scalp. Something about the blocks angered my dad so badly that he held my baby brother up by his scalp and shook him. I remember his screams. I was so terrified for my brother, watching him dangle in midair in so much pain, thinking the top of his head was going to rip clean away. I also remember the shame of being relieved that it wasn't me. I hated my dad in that moment so much I could have killed him. I hated him for hating us so much. There's no place to hide, no place to run. We all grew up angry. I vowed someday that I'd make him pay. We were all angry and violent. It's what we were raised on. It's what we were fed and nurtured with. When you have a grown man punching you in the face as hard as you can every day just because he can, a man who's supposed to love and protect you, how do you ever forgive? I'm going to fast forward his story a little bit. Eventually, I realized that I was carrying him with me everywhere I went, into every intimate relationship, and even into my own parenting. And it wasn't working. It was this more than anything that I think made me simply turn my motorcycle up his driveway one afternoon. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. The pain of constantly carrying him with me finally was greater than the pain of the beatings I took as a child. And something had to give. There was something bigger in me that made me forgive him. One day I drove up his driveway and he came outside and we talked about motorcycles. We both really liked motorcycles. And in that instance, when we were both bent down looking at the greasy engine side by side, I forgave him. I looked at his long gray hair, his wrinkled face, his obvious weakening from hard living and old age. He was human. He was so flawed. He loved motorcycles just like me. And somewhere in the middle of seeing all that, I simply forgave him. It was like this huge boulder was lifted off my chest, and I could finally breathe again. Here's the thing with forgiveness. I can't tell you how to find that freedom. Every parent who's told your kid to say, "I forgive you," to somebody, you know it doesn't work when you just tell them to say it, right? It's the same way for us as adults. I can't tell you what to do. Just say this, just do this, and you'll be free. It doesn't work that way. You'll know it when you feel it shift. He says, that day, it felt like a boulder came off my chest and I could breathe again. I've seen people say, "I forgive you," and it work. I've seen people say, "I forgive you," for 10 years and it finally worked. I've seen people take rocks, write things onto them, and throw them into a lake, and it worked. I've seen people scream out their pain and it worked. I've seen people just sit in silence and something shifted and it worked. I'm guessing as many of you as are here today and as are listening on the podcast, and as many situations as you have, that's how many different ways to do it. But here's when you know it worked. When you feel it shift a bit more. And you have a bit more freedom. Then whatever you did worked. Wouldn't it be so much nicer if I could just tell you guys the formula? I wish it worked that way sometimes, but it doesn't. Let me give you two cautionary tales. First, don't use forgiveness, this step, to try and avoid the last step. We have almost a pathological need to avoid the feelings we're feeling. And if you're just trying to forgive to get away from that, it's not going to work. That I can guarantee you. Forgiveness has to come when you're ready to just let this go. A lot of the spiritual traditions say part of you has to die in order to forgive. The part of you that's holding on, the part of you that's wanting revenge, the part of you that's just wanting to get rid of this and just not have to deal with it anymore, that part has to die so you can finally be free. So what do you need to forgive in your life? Or maybe let me say it more clearly. What are you ready to move on from? What's that wound that's stuck inside of you Are you ready to be free of that? Tell your story. Name the hurt. And grant forgiveness only when you're ready. Just think about this for a second. Those two brains fighting takes an insane amount of our attention and our energy and our capacity, doesn't it? And our sleep. What would you do if you could be free of that? What would you do with that energy? What would you do with that time? What would you do with that capacity? Think of the relationships you could build, the hobbies you could do, the Ironman that you could train for and run. Folks, this stuff is eating us alive. It's sucking us dry. If we would let this go, if we'd move on, if we'd find freedom, think of what we could do. And that's why we talk about this here at Friend Church. Because we're in the business of trying to change the world for the better. And these hurts and these wounds, it's sucking everything out of us. We have nothing left for anyone else in our lives. Okay? Have a great week. But let me say one more thing. Jeff, that charming pastor of a guy over there, always prays in this moment. And people come up to me all the time and say, why don't you pray, Vince? So let me tell you why I don't pray. Praying for me has a sense of like, I'm saying something to some old guy in the sky who may or may not, if I do this right, might come down and fix it for me. Crass, I know, but it has this sense of me and them. But more in this last year, I've been challenged to live out the Johannian version of God. He says it this way, when you love, God is. God's not something out there, over there. God is something that we do, that we engage in. So every day I walk out of here and I work on forgiveness so that I can love the people in my life better. That's prayer to me. So I want to encourage you all this week to pray your asses off, okay? Have a great week, everyone. Next week, Jeff's going to be back with the final step. There is one more step. And then the week after that, we're going to talk about when you need to be forgiven and self-forgiveness. Don't miss it. We'll see you guys next week. Have a great week, everyone.